Good evening. How are we doing? All right? Good. That's what I like to hear. I don't know about you, but I just, when I stop to think about it, I love being led in worship. The fact that we get to be led in worship by Mike and Micah and the worship team, like every Sunday, that's just the thing that we get to experience. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Well, we've been talking, if you haven't been with us the last couple weeks, we've been talking about transition. Liminality, these threshold moments, these times in our lives where our lives are kind of in flux. And we've been asking this question, what does it look like for us as followers of Jesus? What would it mean for us to live faithfully in the in-between places, in times of transition, whether it's personal transition or collective transition? And I say transition because, you know, there's a lot of us, I'm aware of the fact that there's a lot of us that aren't even quite aware if we're in transition at all. You know, we go, okay, is that true of me? I mean, that I'm in transition in this part of my life and in this part of my life. So I would just say the reality is this is going to apply to all of us, you know? It's just because of the circumstances of my own life that I'm thinking about transition at the moment. And tonight I want to remind us, if I'm just going to jump right in, if that's cool, and I want to remind us about this word, this idea, this thing called joy. And I say remind us because I'm thinking that we're all aware of the fact that Christian spirituality, it's serious about a whole number of things, right? It's serious about things like love and obedience and humility and sacrifice and prayer and justice and all of that. It's serious about all of that stuff, but it's also serious, intensely serious, we might say, adamantly serious about joy, right? About living in such a way that regardless of what's happening in our lives, the pressures, the anxieties, the things that we're dealing with, regardless of how much our attention is kind of refracted or fragmented and we're being pulled all of these different ways, of living in such a way that even in the thick of those things, we wouldn't allow joy to get sabotaged in our lives. And I don't know about you, but I would say for a lot of us, it seems to me when we think about our lives as followers of Jesus and what it looks like to live that out day in, day out, week in, week out, we think about joy as kind of this subsidiary thing, as kind of peripheral, as kind of a luxury sometimes, right? Something we can take or leave depending on the day, depending on the circumstance. That's certainly been the case for me, I think, a lot of times in my life. I go, okay, joy, I mean, it'd be cool. I'd like to experience joy. I mean, that'd be nice, but it's not a necessity, you know? I'd go as far as to say some of us are suspicious of joy on occasion. Because let's be honest, joy isn't always cool, you know? And there's so many plastic, happy people in the world, right? And we have an encounter with somebody like that. It has kind of the veneer of joy, but they don't seem to have a lot of depth from what we can tell. And we go, well, that doesn't seem quite right. Like, I'm not sure I want to be like that, you know? And so we think, well, I'm not exactly sure what to do with this thing. We approach joy with caution, not sure how to handle it. Or some of us are like a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, he's saying, dude, you don't understand how excited I am about what's happening at Jacob's Well, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of this community, and the fact that God has brought you and Tim Keel to be teaching pastors here, that's just like awesome, and I'm just like kind of overflowing with this excitement, but I'm trying to keep it in check. Honestly, I'm like trying to hold it down and kind of like, you know, keep it on a short leash. And he told me that, and I thought, I walked away thinking, huh, why is that? And I don't know what he would answer to that question, but I think I know what I would answer because I've had that experience before. I don't know about you. And I find myself sometimes in these moments where I'm experiencing this sense of joy for one reason or another. It's living in me. And I start to think, you know, life is so unpredictable. The world is so unpredictable. The world is in flux all the time. And I don't know what's going to come at me next. And I start to think, because I'm a worrier and I'm a little cautious at times, I think if I open myself up to this thing or make myself vulnerable in that respect, I might get sucker punched. You know? And I don't want to be naive. I don't want to be taken off guard. And so we approach joy a little bit on our heels sometimes, right? With reservation, thinking, yeah, I'm not sure that I even understand how to make that a reality in my life. I mean, how many of us, if we were honest, would say, you know, when it comes to joy, if I'm talking in Facebook terms, my relationship with joy, it's complicated. That's the status. Yeah? And yet the message tonight is simple, and it's that if you belong to Christ, you belong to joy. If you belong to Christ, you belong to joy. We have a text, we have a God, we have a whole cloud of witnesses saying to us over and over and over again, if you belong to Christ, you belong to joy. And you know, if you go and start to look through the Bible and kind of take a survey, I'd encourage you to do that this next week. Maybe just go look, Google it, go find out where joy appears in the scriptures. You start to realize, good grief, it's everywhere. And it's not like it's just the word that's everywhere. It's this, it's the idea. It's like this joyful environment is welling up out of the scriptures, out of these stories and texts and chapters and books. It's just like all over the place. You realize it's not this subsidiary thing. It's very central. It's central to who God is, to his character. It's central to the experience of the people of God. It's central to the story God is telling in this world. I just want to give you a little taste of what I'm talking about here. I just pulled a handful of verses just to kind of point to this thing that I'm talking about. And you know, the scriptures are just incredibly eloquent when it comes to the way they talk about joy, the imagery that they use. Here's a few scriptures along those lines. Job 38 says that when God made the world and determined its dimensions, that the morning stars sang together. The morning stars were the chorus line, in other words, as the song says. That's how some translations render it, by the way. They say joyful concert. The morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. What did that sound like? Psalm 16 says that in God's presence is fullness of joy. In other words, these little glimmers of joy that you and I experience on occasion, if you trace those back to their source, you're going to find this wellspring, this overflowing fountain of joy, and that thing is God. In his presence is fullness of joy. Nehemiah 8, at a time in Israel's life when they're really sad, they're weeping, the people are weeping and mourning, and Nehemiah comes to them and says, no more weeping, no more mourning, the joy of the Lord is your strength. Have you ever thought about joy like that? Being in this place in your life where you're really weak and you realize, you know, what I need right now is not so much like the right idea or the right fix, the right solution to my problem. All I really need is strength to help me negotiate this terrain. I need the joy of the Lord to be my strength. You've stripped off my sackcloth, says the psalmist, and clothed me with joy. And then here's my favorite one, Isaiah 35. Verse 10, this is by far my favorite joy passage in Scripture. I want to give you the passage, and then I want to show you this little footnote that's hidden in my Bible. For those whom Yahweh has ransomed will return, Isaiah says. They will come to Zion shouting for joy, their heads crowned with joy unending. And then here's what the footnote says. Here's what the language is getting at there when it talks about heads crowned with joy. Literally, it says, on their head. The image is of a traveler balancing his luggage, joy, on his head. You know how in some parts of the world, when people are going from one place to the next, they balance their possessions on their head? That's the picture. That God acts in the lives of his people, and they're so ecstatic and kind of overwhelmed. It's like they're walking around with just luggage on their head. Joy-like luggage. Tim Keel and I, we go to the Royals game on Wednesday night, this last Wednesday, and we're in the second section back. We have pretty good seats right to the right, back behind the home plate. We're in perfect foul ball territory, right? Royals versus Yankees, and lo and behold, second inning, Royals batter is up, and he makes contact a little bit, and the ball shoots way up in the air. It's like way up there, you know, and it starts to fade and spin backwards a little bit, and it looks like it might be coming for our section. And you know what happens, right, when a foul ball's hit up in the air like that? Everyone stands up, right? Everyone in that section like, oh, man, could be coming for us. And so it's hanging up there for 3, 4, 5 seconds, and then it starts to drift to the left, and we go, oh. It comes all the way down here. We realize it's going to bounce probably. It's going to land like 15 or 20 feet away, and it does. It comes down in this little tunnel area, and I don't know if it like ricocheted off a wall in the tunnel or if just the spin of the ball kicked it back up, but this ball lands and shoots back up in the air again. And now it's like way up there. It's like probably 15 feet away from us coming our direction, right? It's 12 feet away, 10 feet away, and now Tim Keel and I, we're on the front row, we're leaning over the edge, we have our hands out, and the ball is coming, and it falls in Tim Keel's hands. Unbelievable. Have you seen how short that guy is? And there's 15,000 people in the stadium, you know? And this ball shoots up in the air, and there's just two dudes standing over here in section whatever, row whatever, minding our own business, and the ball comes and falls in one of our hands. It's just like, wow, that's joy like luggage, just a little bit, just this moment. You know, we're giving each other high fives. We know it's not cool to give high fives anymore. We can't help it, though. That's kind of what joy like luggage does. You just start giving fives. Or I'd ask this, did anybody go to the opening of Trader Joe's a couple months ago? Show of hands, who's been to Trader Joe's so far over there? Yeah. An employee over there told me that during the opening week, people were running in the aisles. Adults were running. I had friends calling me. I was in Ohio, and people were here in Kansas City calling me saying, there's a Trader Joe's coming. There's a Trader Joe's coming. We're going to have a Trader Joe's. Did you hear we're going to have a Trader Joe's? And then it opens up. Trader Joe's is open. It's open. And I'm thinking, good grief. You know? I thought the only thing that would have made them happier is if they would have showed up at Trader Joe's and gone in and discovered somewhere in the back a secret IKEA. Oh, my gosh. Heaven has come down. That's joy like luggage. Just a little taste. If you want to go see what it looks like, just go hang out in Trader Joe's. It won't take you very long. Mary, when she's pregnant with Jesus, comes to find Elizabeth. See, Elizabeth, who's pregnant with John the Baptist. In Luke 1, it says that when Elizabeth hears Mary's voice, the child in Elizabeth's womb leaps for joy. The two women who come to the empty tomb and find the risen Christ for the first time and go away to tell the disciples, it says that they leave the garden in fear and great joy. Paul in Philippians 4, writing to the church at Philippi, says, rejoice in the Lord always. Some people translate that, be joyful in the Lord always. And then he gets a little redundant. I will say it again. He says, rejoice. And then we get to the end of the book. Revelation 21, and we have this little passage, this picture given to us. Joy isn't in the text, but it's implied. It's part of the environment. Look, a voice says, here God lives among human beings. He will make his home among them. They will be his people, and he will be their God, God with them. And then I'm going to ask us to just read these last four lines together. Would you read with me? Here we go. He will wipe away all tears from their eyes. There will be no more death, and no more mourning or sadness or pain. The world of the past has gone. The writer says there's going to be a day where God's going to come down and make his home among people. And on that day, he's going to start to wipe away all of the things that have broken their hearts, all of the hurt, all of the suffering that they've dealt with, all of the pain, the loneliness, the broken relationships, discord, financial difficulties, sickness, all of that stuff. He's just going to start wiping it away. And when you wipe all of that away, what do you have left? And so the scriptures bear witness to us. The scriptures come along and say, here's the thing, you're living in a story right now where the joy is kind of where we've come from and joy is where we're headed. You know, joy is the past and joy is our future. The world was created in joy and the world is going to culminate in joy. And yet we are caught in this moment in time, are we not? This window of time, this small part of the narrative arc in which joy is by no means inevitable or easy or automatic or guaranteed. That's where we find ourselves in this little space in human history. And the scriptures come along and say, however, even though the story looks like it's catastrophe every day, even though the story looks like bad news all the time, I mean, let's be honest, events in this world, it's like they militate against joy, right? And yet the scriptures come along and say, even though that's what it looks like, even though the story of this world looks like catastrophe after disaster, there's a different story playing out even as we speak. There's a truer story playing out. And if you belong to Christ, then you belong to that story and you've been given this beautiful vocation to lean into that story, to live into it, to reach out toward that reality in a way that God's story begins to become incarnate. that God's story begins to take on flesh, to be carried around in the lives of just regular human beings like us. You've been given this vocation to live that way and to allow your life to begin to proclaim, whether your mouth is moving or not, that that Jesus in Christ, death really has been defeated by life, that the tomb is really empty. And we've been given a calling to lean toward that truth. As the future, as theologians say, the future has come to find us in the person of Jesus. Meaning death, it might seem like it has the last word, but it's not the last word. It's just the word before the last word. Right? And sickness and loneliness and suffering and all the stuff that we experience that breaks our heart every day. Those aren't the last words. They're just the words before the last words. Cornel West, the activist, theologian, he said, every day that I wake up, catastrophe and despair are right there beside me. I get out of the bed and they're right there with me. And I bring them along with me actually into my day. I keep them close. They're my constant companions, despair and catastrophe. But I never give them the last word. And it's the same with us, right? That we don't discount suffering. We don't hold suffering at arm's length. In fact, part of our vocation, part of living incarnationally, is that we enter into suffering as Jesus entered into suffering, right? We suffer on behalf of other people. We suffer on behalf of the world and God's story in the world. But we never allow our suffering to tempt us, to bring us to the edge, to the abyss, to this place of despair. Because the last word is not despair. The last word is Christ. The last word is resurrection. Last word is life and peace. The last word is God. Look, God has come to live among people. The last word is Jesus ruling as a king over history. And so tomorrow when you get up and despair and catastrophe are right there, and you start to move into your day, and you go to work, and you have whatever meetings you're going to have at work, or you have a lunch appointment, or you're hanging out with your kids, or your spouse, or you're running errands around the city, and despair and catastrophe are right there. And when you make a move, when you resolve yourself to make this move toward joy, to open yourself toward joy, to open yourself to joy and to reach for it, you're saying, I believe that story, the other story is true. I belong to that story. Right? And in so doing, we all participate in this thing called new creation. It began in the person of Jesus and is going to reach its fulfillment at the end of time. We get to participate in the new creation inaugurated by Christ. By reaching out toward joy. And when we do that, you know, some of us, what we need to do in the next, you know, few days, whatever it is we need to look at that thing that's sucking our joy, that's robbing us of joy, whatever situation it is that we're dealing with in our life, whatever person, whoever is making it difficult for us to experience joy, we need to turn to that thing and say, in the words of the prophet Lucinda Williams, you have no right to take my joy and I want it back. You have no right to take my joy because I don't belong to this thing. I belong to Christ, and because I belong to Christ, I belong to joy. So what does that mean for us to begin to try and wear joy like luggage, to try and reach out for that reality, to lean into this truth? You know, the reality is that this is not going to be like a one-time event for any of us. I don't anticipate it's going to be a process, right? But I want to give us some categories to think about joy. These categories have just been helpful to me. I want to share them with you. I've borrowed them, but they're helpful. I think they're worth thinking about. First one is this: joy is something we ask for. It's something that we have to ask for. Often. In 1 Thessalonians 1:6, Paul writes to that church and he says, you received the message that we brought to you despite your suffering. And that's an important phrase. Despite your suffering, you received the message with the joy given you by the Holy Spirit. You ever thought about joy as just something you got to ask for? Go to God and petition him for? Because, you know, we're all going to get sucker punched, right? We're all going to find ourselves in these places where we're thinking, you know, it's just all I can do to keep my head above water and to maintain any kind of equilibrium at all, let alone experience any kind of like deep, abiding sense of security, peace, joy, life, right? And yet sometimes, you know that this is true, we've all met these people, sometimes something happens in a person's life and they just are totally wrecked. And yet you see them and you talk to them and you realize, man, this person is really going through a difficult time. And yet they start saying, you know, the thing is, I mean, I didn't even think that I was going to be able to make it through this week, but I've been asking God for strength. I've just been saying, I need you to help me. I've been asking him for strength, and it's hard to even explain, but there's this thing living in me, you know? There's this peace, there's this equilibrium, there's this kind of joy that transcends all of this stuff living in me. God is just giving it to me. It's just a gift. Sometimes joy is something we ask for. Sometimes, second one, joy is an awareness. The word joy in the New Testament, kairo, shares a root with the word charis, which is gift. Sometimes joy is just an awareness of all the gifts you and I have already been given in our lives, in our just regular run-of-the-mill existences, just by virtue of the fact that we are who we are and we know the people that we know and we have the life that we have, right? Joy is sometimes an awareness. It's this moment when we press pause on our stress and anxiety and go, man, I've been working really hard and I'm pretty tired, I'm kind of exhausted, but I have a job. You know, and there's a lot of people that don't have one of those right now and who would actually probably take my job if I wanted to give it to them. And I'm just really grateful, you know, I'm doing this work. It's kind of a good job too. I kind of like it sometimes. And it's helping make ends meet. So I just need to remember this is a good thing. Or, you know, my marriage, it's like a really difficult thing right now. It's been a struggle. It's kind of falling apart, but man, there's this kid. And you know, having kids is hard, but this kid is a miracle. This kid is a total gift. You know, I've been kind of lonely lately and I'm not sure how to handle that, but man, I'm healthy. I have all, my body works. My mind works. I can get in my car and drive from one place to the other. I have family who cares about me. I have a church that I get to be a part of that's a cool church. Joy is when we stop long enough to become aware of the fact that this thing, this gift, this life, it's like there were thousands of people that could have had this thing, that could have, you know, that probably wanted what this thing that I have here, and yet it popped up in the air, and it was hanging up there for like a while. It was just spinning, and we didn't know where it was going to go, and everyone stood up because everyone wanted it, and then it started fading over there, and I was thinking, oh, it's not coming to me, but then it bounced, and it shot back up again, and I'm just standing there, you know, and I put my hands out, and this thing just fell into my hands. Unbelievable. Joy is an awareness of all the just manifold gifts that God bestows on us all the time, day in, day out, over and over and over again. And then the third one, and this is the hardest one, joy is an action. Philippians 4. So Philippians 4, Paul writes to the church. I'm going to put it up on the board here, but I want to write it because, you know, sometimes it's easy to forget that Paul didn't, like, project his letters to the churches, you know? He didn't type them out. He didn't text them. He wrote them longhand, and here's why I think that's important. I'm kind of a writer, and so I write longhand sometimes, and there's something that happens when you're writing at this pace. You have to kind of choose your words. You have to be sort of painstaking about it. It makes you stop long enough to think about what you're saying. And Paul's writing to these people and he says, rejoice in the Lord always. And to be honest, I get to that part and that's where I'm going to argue with Paul. If I'm going to get in an argument with Paul, it's going to be right there, right? I go, seriously, man, like, can we just get realistic for a minute? Do you have any idea what it's like to live in the 21st century? Answer, no. And to be honest, I think it would kind of be inappropriate on Paul's part to write something like that. It'd be insensitive. It would suggest that he was out of touch if it weren't for the fact that Paul, as he's writing words like these, is at that moment in jail. The whole letter of Philippians is written in jail. You go read through that letter, just go pay attention to how many times joy pops up to the surface. And you know, when people were in jail back in the day, it's not like Leavenworth. They didn't get three meals and a cot and time out in the yard, you know? Jail at that time was brutal. It was very dark. It was a savage kind of place. They didn't feed you regularly. You had to rely on friends, people in your community to bring you food. Paul is probably feeling pretty lost, pretty lonely, right? Uncomfortable, maybe hungry. It's not like Paul is just unsure of what's going to come in the next couple weeks. He doesn't know if he's going to live or going to die. And yet he's writing something like this. And even though I get argumentative with him, you know, here's the other reality. I'm aware of the fact that Paul is a pastor, and he's actually in relationship with the people that he's writing to. And so as he's writing something like this, I kind of picture Paul stopping at this point and picturing people with names and faces and stories, picturing the families that he's writing to, and thinking, man, that's going to be provocative. And I picture Paul pausing and kind of allowing those people to argue with him for a minute, to kind of leverage their justifications, their rationalizations for why it is that they shouldn't make joy an action in their life. Allowing them to kind of push back. And then, you know, of course, he writes the next thing. But Paul, seriously, man, I mean, my life is really, really hard right now, you know? I'm having a hard time finding work. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to make ends meet financially. And he's going, yeah, I get it. It's very difficult. Life is very difficult. But I will say it again. Do you belong to Christ? Then you belong to joy. Yeah, but Paul, seriously, like, I'm kind of up against it, man. Like, I'm really not doing well. I'm, you know, discouraged. I get it. You know, life is really hard. I will say it again. Do you belong to Christ? You belong to joy. So rejoice in the Lord. Make joy an action. How do we do that? And just give us a handful of ideas. You can appropriate them however you like, but I think for some of us that's going to mean that we got to learn to celebrate a little bit more regularly. We got to get better at celebrating, you know? Means we got to maybe go take a day off sometime in the next month that we didn't anticipate taking and just going and doing something that brings us life. Maybe it means going and having a really good meal and taking our time with it. You know, maybe it means throwing a party. Maybe it just means sleeping a lot longer than we've been sleeping, you know, lately. Maybe it means going to Trader Joe's and just kind of running up and down the aisles, you know, until you're tired. For some of us, it's going to mean going to hang out with people who are just kind of naturally joyful. They're just kind of good at this, not in a fake way, but in a genuine way, and just allowing their joy to become contagious in our lives, allowing it to kind of rub off on us, right? For some of us, it might mean going to hang out with someone who's actually less well off than us as a way of triggering that perspective we were talking about, that awareness. For some of us, it's going to mean figuring out a way to create joy in the lives of other people. Because you know how it happens, right? You go and create joy, you make more joy in the world, and it's like a boomerang. It somehow just like comes back on you, you know? For some of us, maybe it means actually giving financially, giving of the resources that God has given us. Maybe it means just going back and just putting something in the offering box as a way of just going, expressing your joy or opening yourself to joy again. We're going to have to learn to celebrate. We're going to have to learn to lean into these things, to lean toward them, to reach out, to ask other people for help in that respect. Do you belong to Christ? Paul says, then you belong to joy. And here's the thing that strikes me most after I've read about Philippians and thought about Philippians over the last week. You read that letter and you realize, you know, Paul spent a lot of time in prison in his life. He spent a good chunk of time in prison. But at some point, I'm not sure when, and at some point, he stopped being a prisoner. You know? At some point, Paul stopped being a prisoner of circumstances. of whatever difficult situation he found himself in, of people in his life who were making it difficult for him. He just started saying, you know, you have no right to take my joy. I want it back. Because I belong to Christ, and because I belong to Christ, I belong to joy, and I'm going to tell anyone who will listen that they belong to joy too. And why, how should they respond to that? Well, they should rejoice. They should try and make joy an action in their lives to whatever degree that they can in this moment. It's a process. No doubt it's a process. But it's available to us, this thing, right? Paul was in prison a lot in his life, but at some point he stopped being a prisoner, and so I just want to ask, what about you? Have you been in a place in your life lately where you've just kind of been struggling to experience joy? Have you had a joy deficit? Have you been a little bit suspicious of joy? Have you allowed yourself to become a prisoner to various circumstances, situations with people, conflicts, financial issues, whatever it is? Do you need to turn to something like that in your life over the course of the next week and go, you have no right to take my joy. I don't belong to you. I don't belong to this situation. I belong to Christ. I belong to a different story than what seems to be playing out in the world here. And because I belong to that story, I also belong to joy. And I'm going to lean into that story. Do you need to ask? Do you need to be made aware again of the gifts that you've been given? Do you need to act? By the way, if you're interested in asking God for joy tonight, there's going to be people back in the prayer chapel who are willing to join with you in prayer and would love to actually spend time with you just asking God to give you this thing called joy. Saying with you, because I belong to Christ, I belong to joy. Amen? Thanks for listening. Pray with me. It's true that this thing gets complicated, Father, in my life and the lives of so many people that I know. I am a suspicious person sometimes when it comes to this idea of having joy, of experiencing joy. And yet you, in your presence, is fullness of joy, and you invite your people to open themselves to joy regardless of what's happening in their lives. And so I just would ask that you would give us the courage to do that, the resolve to do that over the next few days, over the next few weeks, that we would reach out toward that joy and that we would reach out toward that story, that it would make a home in us, that that story would become incarnate. And we would allow ourselves to be caught up in the vision and the picture of new creation, the story you're telling even now in our lives and in the life of this world. We believe that your joy is our strength. We believe that your joy is contagious. We want to be people who wear joy like luggage on our heads. Help us do that, we pray. In your name, amen.